Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us for our media call today. You probably have already heard and know that the president has released his fiscal budget for 2015, and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is in here in the studio, and he's going to be discussing the president's FY15 budget. Reporters, if you want to ask a question of the secretary, he's here. Let us know by pressing *1 on your touch-tone phone to do that. And now I turn it over to the secretary. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Susan. Thanks very much, and thanks to everybody joining the call. I want to take a few minutes of your time to sort of lay out the challenge that this department has at this point in time. Obviously, with the passage of a comprehensive farm bill, we are in the process of implementing the provisions of that over 900-page bill. Compounding our challenge is the recently released ag census and its findings. With fewer farms in the country today, a shrinking middle both in terms of the size of operations and in terms of income-producing operations in agriculture, the aging nature of the farm population places a responsibility on the department to for farmers and ranchers to preserve profitability for large-scale commercial operations, to expand mid-sized operations, and to assist small and beginning operations. At the same time, the rural economy faces a continued challenge of high poverty rates in many areas, limited economic opportunity, and declining populations. That requires the department to focus its effort on those high poverty areas, those persistently poor areas, and to help to revitalize the rural economy. Climate is changing, which is going to challenge agriculture and livestock production, and it will impose upon this department the responsibility of developing strategies and technologies to deal with that changing climate so that we can continue to be an extraordinary agricultural producer. All of this is in the context of a continued challenging time for budgets. We are faced, as everyone knows, with an overall number that Congress has agreed to for the 2015 budget. We also are cognizant of the fact that if things do not change, we'll be faced with significant sequester cuts in 2016. And we're focusing on all of this work with a reduced workforce that, when I became secretary, was at 103,000 staff years and is now somewhere in the neighborhood of 98,000 staff years. Fortunately, this department has been proactive through its Blueprint for Stronger Service, and the budget that we published today, I believe, has sort of the blueprint for Stronger Service 2.0 in an effort to try to deal with these challenges. So all of this requires us to focus on reform and results, on creating opportunity, and investing in innovation. In a short, this is an ROI budget, and I want to talk about that in just a few minutes. I think this budget meets the requirements of producing results, supporting reform, expanding new opportunities, and investing in innovation. And it does so while spending less money than last year in both the discretionary and mandatory accounts. In fact, this budget will be somewhere between $400 and $500 million less on the discretionary side than when I became secretary. Let me focus on what this budget will do. First of all, it continues to invest in the Farm Bill safety net and the credit requirements that are important to beginning farmers and socially disadvantaged farmers. This budget will help to fund 40,000 loans, 85% of which will go to beginning farmers and socially disadvantaged farmers. It obviously provides a continued commitment to crop insurance coverage of what will be estimated at $63 billion worth of crops, and it will assist and aid in the implementation of the Farm Bill safety net provisions, whether it's the revenue or price loss processes. In conservation, the budget will support 25 million acres of CRP land. It will add an additional 23 million acres to an already record level of conservation acres in our EQIP and CSP program. And it will allow us to begin implementation of the regional partnerships called for in the Farm Bill, an exciting opportunity for us to leverage the financial resources of the federal government with other partners to expand conservation. In the area of rural development, I'm excited about the opportunity to use our business development programs to support somewhere between 35 and 45,000 new jobs or retaining those jobs in rural areas, with a particular emphasis on a new opportunity in the bioproduct manufacturing area. Local and regional food systems, which has been a focus of this administration, will continue to expand beyond the 65 food hubs that we've seen in the last several years and a nearly 50% increase in farmers' markets. And we'll continue to aggressively promote agricultural trade, direct assistance to somewhere between $4 and $5 billion of trade activity will help to support another several thousand jobs in addition to stabilizing farm income. 163,000 home loans or refinance loans will be financed in this budget. And community facilities, education, public safety, and health care will be improved to the extent that perhaps as many as 10 million rural residents will see improved service. This budget will also protect and help to develop markets. The APHIS budget is slightly increased, which will allow it to continue to do its work in securing and protecting $165 billion of livestock, poultry, and specialty crops. In the area of food safety, we'll continue to focus on the Salmonella plan. We are encouraged by the fact that we've seen a significant drop in illnesses related to the products that we inspect. Based on the most recent data, 11% drop, about 52,000 fewer illnesses than previous. We want to see, obviously, that continue. This budget will adequately fund WIC. We'll support SNAP and our school meal programs. We should see an increase in school breakfast as a result of this budget. This budget also, I think, focuses on expanded opportunity. There are a number of examples of that in this budget, but I'm going to focus on three for my opening remarks. We are financing the Healthy Food Financing Initiative, which is authorized under the Farm Bill. This should allow us to begin more aggressively partnering with the Treasury Department and Health and Human Services to address food deserts in both rural and urban areas. The budget calls for the creation of a new rural core, which will be 150 highly trained technical experts in rural development who will focus their time and effort on extremely impoverished areas of rural America, extending our Strike Force initiative and the Promise Zone efforts. And we'll do expanded research in forest-based products, researching and developing new products which will allow us to do a better job of maintaining our forests and using the wood that's produced from better restoration and resilience efforts. The budget will invest in innovation. Excited about the opportunity to make the case to Congress for the development of three innovation institutes, one focused on antimicrobial research, extraordinarily important as we deal with trying to deal with livestock diseases and illnesses, reducing our reliance on the use of vaccines and so forth to make sure that we are not developing additional problems for both animals and people. This research is extraordinarily important given our focus on the utilization of appropriate utilization of vaccines and so forth with treating livestock. A second institute will be focused on pollinator health. Everyone knows that we are seriously concerned about the ability of our lands to support pollinators because they are so critically important to agriculture, and also an innovation institute focused on the bio-based product manufacturing development, which will help to create jobs. Innovation will also be rewarded, I think, in terms of what we're trying to do with our ARS facilities, modernizing them, with a particular emphasis on poultry disease. We once again ask Congress to consider the establishment and development of a Southwest Poultry Disease Lab in Georgia. This is part of the President's Growth, Opportunity, and Security Fund. That fund also calls for additional research dollars, and these research dollars lead to additional licensing agreements that are income-producing, as well as new patents. About 388 licensing agreements are currently supported by the research that's done at USDA, and in the last 5 years, several hundred patents have been developed. This budget, I think, also focuses on a series of reforms, and I'll touch on three or four of those reforms. Some press has already been given to a new way of funding forest fire suppression. 45 million homes in 70,000 communities are connected to the wildland-urban interface, with the increased dryness, increased hazardous material buildup. Our forest fires have become more intense, and the fire season has been extended and is longer. This has put a tremendous stress on the budget for the Forest Service. In the past, you might spend up to 13 to 15% of the budget on fire suppression. Today, it's close to 40%. We have to treat fires, particularly these very intense, long, more expensive fires, as the natural disasters that they are, and developing a system where we don't continue to take money out of the restoration resiliency funds and maintenance funds creates uncertainty in that budget and doesn't allow us to do a good enough job of reducing that hazardous fuel. What we are proposing is to create a way in which we will fund 70% of the 10-year average and create a mechanism and system for the more expensive fires, the more dangerous fires, the long, very expensive fires would be funded sort of off budget in a way that will allow us not to have to transfer money in and out of accounts as we have been doing in the past. This budget also creates a new vision and an expanded vision for our Farm Service Agency offices. As we embrace new technologies and as farmers become used to doing work at home with their computers, and as we see advances in MIDAS and in the Conservation Streamlining Initiative, the question becomes, what will FSA offices be in the future? And our vision is that they will be a place where farmers and ranchers can go to see about additional opportunities, a better understanding of what rural development programs might help create new market opportunities, what conservation opportunities there may be with ecosystem markets and the like. We want that FSA office to be a model service agency office, and so we are calling for a consolidation of a number of offices, some of which currently do not have any full-time employees, and some of which have a small number of full-time employees, and using those resources to help this redesign of the nearly 2,000 FSA offices we have across the country. This budget also calls for continued focus on process improvement and on the Blueprint for Stronger Service. Departments are going to be required to absorb the payment of GSA rental payments in their overall budget, as opposed to having a separate line item as in the past. This is really going to put a focus and an effort on our part to utilize our space, particularly in the capital area, the D.C. area, more effectively and more efficiently. We think there are opportunities to save a significant resource and actually create potentially a better working environment through better space utilization, and this budget will drive that effort. And finally, in rural development, we are providing rental assistance to nearly 285,000 households. We want to continue to be able to do that, but the reality is that we've got to right-size our rental assistance programs. When Congress changed the way in which we fund rental assistance, so now it is almost all annually funded, it created a great stress on that budget. And so we're asking Congress to give us the tools to be able to, over a period of time, more efficiently and more effectively monitor and utilize rental assistance in a way that doesn't create a significant budget stress. In the past, we've had to, again, rob Peter to pay Paul because of this ongoing increased responsibility, because of the way in which Congress has changed the funding of rental assistance, and we want to be able to sort of take the pressure off the rest of the budget and do it in a thoughtful and careful way. So this budget, I think, accepts the challenges that this department faces. It focuses on results that matter and places that matter. It focuses on creating new and additional opportunity in rural areas and to help revitalize that rural economy. And I think it makes a significant investment in innovation, which is going to be helpful to agriculture and to rural America. So we are anxious to visit with Congress about their priorities and work with Congress as we work through the budget process.
All right, Mr. Secretary, thank you. Reporters, once again, if you'd like to ask a question of the Secretary, please let us know by pressing star 1 on your phone. We do have some callers on the line. Let's go to Chris Clayton with DTN. Chris.
Thank you for taking questions, Secretary. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, Chris.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'd like to ask you, sir, about the proposals on crop insurance, particularly given that we just passed the Farm Bill that has very specific details on crop insurance and what USDA can do, for instance, with the SRA. Why have a proposal now that recommends, cuts in the rate of return for companies, administrative cuts, which would get a lot of resistance on Capitol Hill?
Well, Chris, budgets are statements of priorities. And as you know, we're dealing with a budget in which Congress has established a defined amount of money in which we are to fund all of the activities of the federal government. This has obviously not been an easy process, but it seemed to me that we needed to remain consistent, as we have in previous budgets, in making these proposals as a way of drawing attention to the fact that the government does indeed have a partnership with producers and insurance companies. And the question is whether that partnership is as equitable and fair to taxpayers as it is to producers and as it is to insurance companies. And the reality is insurance companies have done very well over the history of crop insurance. The reality is that crop insurance is no longer something where we have to convince people to buy crop insurance. It's for most producers a requirement of obtaining credit. And we have seen through studies that the average return necessary to finance a profitable insurance effort is somewhere in the neighborhood of 12%. Companies are currently making around 14%. So the question, I think, is how can we continue to have this conversation and debate? I think it's a healthy debate to have. Obviously, there are going to be things about our budget that, folks are going to be expressing concerns about. And frankly, as others roll out their budget priorities, there are probably going to be areas where they will focus on things they've brought up before as a way of continuing the debate and conversation. So when you have to fit things within a finite amount, you got to make choices. You got to set priorities. Our priorities are making sure that we have a solid crop insurance program, which this budget, I think, supports. But at the same time, we've got a lot of responsibilities. We've got the responsibilities to rural development. We've got responsibilities to research. We've got responsibilities to the Forest Service, to the private working lands and conservation. This department is a difficult one to budget for because of all of the areas of our mission. So we're trying to strike the right and equitable balance.
Our next call comes from Shannon Travis with CNN.
Mr. Secretary, I have a question about food safety and inspection. I'm reading here that the budget proposes just over $1 billion for the inspection of beef, poultry, egg products, $9.3 million decrease from 2014's enacted level. How might the department realize those savings? Are we talking less inspectors or something else? And then the second part is, how can you reassure anyone who might be concerned that this may adversely affect food safety?
Well, let me answer the second part of your question first, with the fact that our recent data would suggest that we've seen a 11% decrease in the number of illnesses attributed to the products that FSIS is responsible for inspecting year to year, and that's 52,000 fewer illnesses. And so hats off to the food inspectors, hats off to the changes that we've made at USDA since I've been secretary, testing bench trim, developing and identifying new adulterants for E. coli, non-0157 STECs, a salmonella performance standard, a campylobacter performance standard, first ever, improvements in our public health information system that allows us to assemble data, mine data, be able to be proactive in identifying areas and issues. So there's been an aggressive effort focused on this. The savings that's in this budget is a result of a proposal to modernize poultry inspection, which has not really changed much in the last 60 years. I think we know a lot more about where pathogens attach, what pathogens are most of concern, and how we might be able to improve the inspection process while at the same time saving money. Again, this is I'm fairly confident that what we're proposing will actually reduce illnesses, and I'm confident based on the fact that we've had an over 10-year experiment with this inspection system in a number of plants, and we've actually seen some decline in illnesses as a result. So, bottom line, we're not compromising safety here. We've actually seen an improvement in safety, and we're going to continue to focus on it. Obviously, as long as there's a single person getting sick, there's obviously more work to do. But the steps that we've taken have been pretty significant, and I think they're showing results.
Let's continue with ClimateWare's Tiffany Stecker. Tiffany?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Secretary, about a month or two ago, you announced the opening of the climate hubs. You also announced this in a speech last year. I'm wondering where the funding for those hubs are they going to be funded? Are they through the Climate Change Office or another place?
Well, the Climate Change Hubs are a collaborative effort involving a number of mission areas of USDA, and so the support and help for the Climate Hubs will be coming from a variety of mission areas. Some money will come from the Research, Education, and Extension mission area that is our partner with a number of land-grant universities and provides a number of grants. It also funds the Agricultural Research Service, which will have an integral role to play in the Climate Hubs. Some will be funded in part from the Forest Service, because this obviously involves forested land as well. NRCS will be engaged as well. So it's basically these hubs will be funded through the budgets of these existing mission areas. And I think we will also see a collaboration with private and nonprofit partners as well. So this is not, it doesn't require a specific appropriation. It doesn't require a specific line item. What it does require is a directive to identify and locate these hubs and to give them a mission, and their mission is pretty clear. They're to do a vulnerability assessment of each region of the country in terms of agricultural production and forestry. They are to then assess what steps can be taken, what technologies could be available to mitigate or adapt to whatever changing climate is being experienced in that region, and then to disseminate that information via the Extension Service operation and through other web-based tools. All of that can be funded within this existing budget.
Up next on the line, we have Jerry Hagstrom with the Hagstrom Report. Jerry.
Hello. First of all, I noticed that there were user fees imposed on GPSA and one other agency that I didn't recognize. I'm used to these FSIS user fees being proposed. Could you explain those? And also, in the president's budget, I see there is a provision to restore the cut to food stamps. I guess this is fulfilling a promise that he made earlier to propose that when it was cut to fund the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. Could you explain these, please?
Jerry, let me talk to you about some of the fees that you've referred to. These fees actually are not new; they've been proposed before. There's a user fee in APHIS is used to cover the costs in relationship to review, maintenance, and inspections connected with licensing activities, for example, under the Animal Welfare Act. The GPSA user fee is really designed to sort of modernize the fee structure. It's been a while since that's been looked at, and the reality is that if we're able to use fees, perhaps it takes a little of the stress off the budget. Forest Service has a fee in terms of grazing permits, which has been proposed before. There's a user fee for the Department of Management and the BioPreferred program. So we are basically proposing the same fee increases as we've proposed in the past. And frankly, this is a result of our determination of what the appropriate equities and balance is in terms of the services that are being provided, and obviously These are tight budget times for USDA. I'm not sure what you're talking about in terms of food stamp participation and the cost of food stamps. All I could say is that this budget does reflect what we're beginning to see in the data, which is that there's been a plateauing, and now we're suggesting a decline in participation in the food stamp program and the SNAP program, and we anticipate and expect that we'll be working hard with a number of pilot projects as instructed and directed in the Farm Bill to create the right way to reduce the cost of this program, which is by finding out opportunities for those who are able-bodied, who are looking for work, who want to work and can work, to be able to link them more effectively with work.
Our next call comes from Brad Hare with Farm Press.
Yes, Secretary. I'm wondering a little bit if you can talk a little bit more about the consolidation of the FSA office that you mentioned earlier, what the plan is for that, maybe locations, especially as we're looking at this next year, too, as we start implementing this new Farm Bill. There's going to need to be a lot of on-the-ground help with farmers and producers. If you could talk a little bit more about that consolidation and plan for that. Thank you.
We have, I think, 31 offices in the current FSA portfolio of over 2,100 offices that currently have no full-time employee at the office. It's basically a space. Someone stops by from time to time, but it is not a fully functioning office. We have a number of offices as the recently passed Farm Bill directs us to take a look at where there are circumstances and situations where offices are staffed with one or two full-time employees, but they are within 20 miles of an existing facility that is more significantly staffed. So we continue to take a look at ways in which we can more effectively and efficiently provide service. At the same time, we're investing in the modernization of our technology, and we're seeing the first signs of that effort. Farmers now don't necessarily have to go to multiple offices if they have land holdings in different counties. They can obtain information about their programs and so forth by sitting in one office and be able to access information about their facilities at the end of this year, but their facilities in one office, even though they may be located in multiple counties. As that occurs, that's going to create less activity than we've traditionally seen. We won't have as much paper flowing. We won't have as much activity. We won't have as much as many visits. Over time, we're going to be hopefully get to a point where farmers will be able to access their information, their records, apply for programs without even coming into an office. They'll be able to do it at their convenience in their home based on technology. So I think we have a responsibility to ask the question, as things change, how do we change and modernize the Farm Service Agency offices? And I think we can do this in a way that really provides greater service, better service, for producers. These folks will not only provide information about the traditional programs, but they will also be sort of the place of first resort when farmers are looking at new ways or creative ways to increase income opportunities. Right now you've got a situation where a farmer has to start, if he's thinking about a conservation program or is he thinking about developing a co-op with a number of farmers to produce a biofuel facility or a bioprocessing manufacturing opportunity, or creating a new market opportunity for an ecosystem market, or taking a look at a local and regional food system market to use some of the resources on his land, creating other opportunities through conservation. He's got to go to separate and distinct places, and he may not even know where to start. And it seems to me that the Farm Service Agency office is a great place for that farmer to be able to go to and get information not just about the farm service programs, but also just enough information about rural development programs, the conservation programs, and contact information so that so it's more convenient for farmers to think about multiple ways to produce income, multiple opportunities to expand income opportunities on the farm. And so the idea here is to, as we are using technology, taking a look at adequately staffing these offices so that there's never a lack of personnel in the office, and so that there are people who are able and knowledgeable to provide basic information about other programs. The second thing that these offices will do, I think, is it will make an even more concerted effort to reach out to beginning farmers and ranchers and to assist them. The Farm Bill contains a number of incentives and programs designed to try to encourage more young people to get in the farming business. I mentioned the aging population of farmers, and I will tell you that's a deep concern. It should be a concern for everybody in rural America. And in order to encourage young people, we're going to have to go out and aggressively market opportunities. We're going to have to make it a little easier than it is today to get in the business, and you're going to have people who are working hard to be able to provide that knowledge, that information about beginning farmer programs. That will be very difficult to do in an office where you have one or two staff people. It is less difficult to do in an office that may have six or eight or ten staff people. So when you combine technology, a new opportunity to justify and to continue to invest in thousands of offices across the country, it makes sense for us to continue to look at places where we can be more efficient and more effective. And that's basically what this is. Now, as far as locations, that has not been determined. We are responsible to come up with a plan. We're responsible to give Congress notice. We're responsible to have public hearings, and all of that will take place. But, you know, and I should point out this is for 2015. It's not something that's going to occur in 2014. And a lot of the Farm Bill questions that are going to be raised, no doubt, will be during that 2014 year. So we're conscious of the need for outreach. We just want to make sure that there continues to be a modern set of responsibilities, a modern call to action for our Farm Service Agency offices so that we can continue to invest in them, continue to improve them, and continue to make them as helpful as they possibly can be.
All right, we've got time for a couple of more calls. Let's go to Larry Drelling with High Plains Journal, and our last call will come from Derek Kane with AgriPulse, but first let's go to Larry.
Hi, Mr. Secretary. I just want to expand a little bit on what you mentioned on Friday at Commodity Classic and on the previous caller's question as well. You were talking about the fact that some of these offices are temporarily staffed and you were going to move some of these folks from FSA and have them do other duties. Is that correct? Perhaps look into rural development work? Is that correct?
Well, I think you have to look at this thing in totality. As we institute MIDAS, as farmers and producers can access information about their operation more conveniently, and without actually being potentially involving staff, the question's going to be asked by folks around the country, what are these folks going to do? And part of what they're going to do is continue to operate the farm programs as they should. But I think I think we can create a new opportunity for folks in the Farm Service Agency office to provide additional assistance and help, additional information that farmers might want to consider as we look at the farm of the future. There's no question we're going to be looking at ways in which beginning farmers are going to look at multiple income opportunities. Conservation continues to evolve. Ecosystem markets and new opportunities to create money through investment through conservation. New rural development. The bio-based manufacturing opportunities create new ways to use agricultural waste product. And so the question is, where do you go for that kind of information? How do you get started? And it seems to me the Farm Service Agency is a good place for that basic information to be housed, and gives a expanded mission opportunity for Farm Service Agency's offices, and it allows them to have a 21st century set of responsibilities. So you can't look at this thing in the rearview mirror. You got to look at it through the windshield. You got to look at things in a forward leaning way. And essentially, what I'm seeing is, with improved technology, greater access for farmers with computers and internet, the ability to sign up for programs over the next 2, 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to see a whole change in the way in which farmers do business with the federal government. As that occurs, we have to create new opportunities to keep those Farm Service Agency offices viable. and this is one way to do it. And it's much more difficult to do that if you've got an office that has one or two people in it. And I think the Farm Bill recognizes that by giving us direction in terms of what kinds of offices we should first consider. And I think there are some other opportunities for us to take a look at efficiencies. So you take a look at the new technology, you take a look at emerging income opportunities that involve other mission areas and making it more convenient for farmers to access that information, and you look at continued budget pressure. And the combination of all that, I think, suggests that we need to constantly ask tough questions.
Hey, our last call comes from Derek Kane with AgriPulse. Derek, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Secretary. Thank you for taking the questions. I'm wondering what the budget would do to advance agricultural trade, like market promotion, access, beyond what's currently being done.
Well, this budget basically maintains continued funding of all of the trade promotion programs. And, you know, we're going to continue to aggressively pursue that. This budget also contains additional money for APHIS. And APHIS is involved with the Foreign Ag Service in breaking down barriers when countries create new certification requirements or they begin to pose new ways to do business that could potentially be a barrier to trade. APHIS is called into play to break those barriers down, and they've been quite successful, and this budget provides a little more money for APHIS to do that. You know, we're obviously going to continue to work with the Trade Representative's Office to expand trade, both in terms of bilateral and multilateral agreements. You know, we've seen record increases in trade. We've seen record increases in value and volume. We anticipate and expect this year to be another good, solid year in trade, maybe a record as well. Next year, we're also projecting to be a good, solid year. We are seeing American agricultural products being very cost competitive. And nobody has better quality. And with commodity prices coming down a little bit, it makes us even more competitive, and that's why we've seen significant increases in corn exports recently. Soybean exports continue to be strong, and livestock continues to be at record levels. So this budget will continue to promote trade in a very aggressive way.
And with that, Mr. Secretary, thank you. Thank you, everybody on the line, and that's going to do it.